body heals. Everyone needs.
Yeah, they're quite useless. Quite mm-hmm. useless.
It is true. It is true.
And I have my nomination for you for deleting the last episode.
Okay.
On our good friend Tubi,
mm-hmm.
he downloaded the app. I'll give you a couple of weeks to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll probably take that.
3:10 to Yuma.
Sorry?
3:10 to Yuma.
You made it all the way through the epic movies.
Don't.
No. I don't think they've got anything quite of that quality.
Well, I don't know. I'm just going to jump straight onto Tubi and see what it's recommending for me.
Well, I'm going to my suggestion for
first straight off, it's a Reese Witherspoon, Kiefer Sutherland movie,
Freeway.
1995, Freeway.
Yeah, I remember that. It was like one of their breakout roles. That actually might be pretty good. But I'm going to suggest going to America.
We've
all seen Coming to America. Now it's time to go to America.
Going to America. All right. Fuck you.
You hit the delete button, not me.
That's the kind of shit I would do again. You know what? They've actually got a couple of decent things on there now. Like, they've got The Green Wing, which is actually really good British comedy. But then that's almost next to MILF. They really do know best. And Space Babes from Outer Space.
Cormie's not quite sure it's worth the investment of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm creating an account to watch a couple of shitty films. Might actually be decent. They finally made a film about the Tin Man.
Of course they did. I think that might actually be a TV series or a mini series.
You're right.
Mm.
Zooey Deschanel. No, it's quite old.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Dreyfuss. Alan yep. Cumming. Wow.
Yeah, it was. I remember the advertising for it. I think it was originally on Sci-Fi. And it was like, oh, it's going to be gritty and really, really adult and serious. It had the budget of an Uwe Boll movie. And actually, he somehow manages to get relatively good budgets considering the quality of the movies. A terrible student movie. And it was awful.
Yeah. Then maybe they lucked out and got some stars before that. You know, Zooey Deschanel before she was famous.
Yeah. And, it's like Michael Caine doing Jaws. You know, it's like, well, I've never watched the movie, but I have very much enjoyed the house that it bought.
Yes, indeed. Oh, Ben Kingsley was in an Uwe Boll film.
Yeah. Yeah. It's people will do anything for a paycheck, I guess. Ask Nicolas Cage. Should we get on to that?
Unfortunately, even though you have a Tubi account, I can't download the films and watch them on the plane next week.
Yeah, I am not getting a Tubi account, so I am happy to just stream it at a convenient 2:00 in the morning.
maybe see if Shady's interested. She might enjoy it. She likes Venom.
Going to America and Venom. I think that's being particularly cruel to Venom.
Okay. It wasn't great.
I mean, it wasn't terrible.
No, that's true.
Yeah. Anyway, you good to start?
Let's go.
All right. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Armchair Producers, the revised episode 51, because I completely deleted the original source material for episode 51. So we're 51 again. I am one of the...
Just say what you said last time.
I can't remember what I said last time. I can barely remember what I said just 30 seconds ago.
No, that's true. Unfortunately, It's lost to the ages, and George will be punished.
Yes.
For this against our Russian bots.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I am one of your hosts, George Terran, alongside, as always, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Travis Croft. He is the man
disappointed most with deleting the original episode 51.
And he has chosen a suitable punishment for my transgression. And we are using the Tubi app of streaming. And I have got to watch Going to America. That's right.
This is the same treasure chest of classics that included one of your recent reviews, Titanic 2,
yes. Which they have listed on their, you know how they have like comedy movies and different categories? They have Titanic 2 listed as a cult classic.
Yeah, that's...
I think that's being super generous or incredibly derogatory to anything that has ever received cult status.
If you only use that, anything could be a cult classic.
That's true.
If only people like you should be bothered watching it. But anyway, so you will come back to us in the next episode and tell us all about what it's like to go to America.
Yeah.
Well, next week I will be going to America.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't hear from us for a couple of weeks.
Ooh, I wonder if me watching Going to America is literally just a live stream of you.
I suspect watching me on a plane playing Switch would probably be more entertaining.
Probably. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. He said it. He will finally be playing his Switch. That is probably fast approaching a year old at this point, and you've maybe...
Over a year old now. I have played it before. I spent quite a few hours into Skyrim when I first got it.
Oh, that's
right. I had a significant commute because I couldn't walk.
Mm, yes, your excuse for not watching Greece.
I have bought and downloaded the Untitled Goose Game, which is tearing
it's
really up
fun.
And it's made by Australians. I did not know that.
It is, yeah. I recently saw that Untitled Goose Game had a previous title that they were considering, and that was Some Like It Honk.
Not bad. Maybe that'll be a sequel. Considering it's done so well, I imagine I'll probably try and pump another one out.
Yeah, it has kind of gone viral, really, hasn't it?
It's got a smart little... I haven't played it yet, but it looks like the trailer was funny. Mm. It's an interesting idea for a game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cheap.
Yeah.
It's like $25 or something, I think, from memory, compared to $90 for your normal AAA release. So yeah. I understand it's quite a short game as well. But anyway, so I guess the show there's space in the market for both.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Congratulations to House House. I think that's their name. The
yes.
Development company who made it here in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
So... It's a shame they don't make many video games. EA shut up shop here a while ago, and that team, biggest studios have packed up and left Australia.
But I think one of the last ones was 2K had some people, one of the spin-off Borderlands games or something was produced here or something.
That's right. The pre-sequel was made here, and they're gone as well.
Yeah. Oh, well, never mind.
I will be hopefully sinking maybe an hour or two into Zelda, and we'll finally get a chance to give my impressions.
You'll come back. I know what your impressions will be. I'm like, I mean, it's all right, but it's not doing anything original.
Like, I didn't like the Assassin's Creed games, and everyone loses their fucking shit about those games. I didn't really care for Bioshock. I thought that was kind of boring. Everyone loses their shit about how good the story is and what a great game it is. I'm like, nah, I don't see it. So yes, there is a bit of an even money chance I will look at Zelda and go, it's an open world game, but it's no Red Dead Redemption 2. But we will see.
So have you come around on Red Dead Redemption 2?
I always liked Red Dead Redemption 2.
You just seemed rather kind of dulled when you were first playing it.
I don't remember. That was a year ago. Jesus, it was, I didn't recall being done. I loved it. I thought it was amazing. I think it's one of the most amazing pieces of storytelling in a video game we've ever seen. The online component is a fucking dumpster fire.
Oh, really?
A dumpster fire of shitness, which I was kind of hoping, considering it, I don't believe it's done anywhere near as well as GTA Online's done, that we might actually get, heaven forbid, a single-player DLC for a Rockstar game. Yeah. Crazy. You actually have to create proper new content rather than just multiplayer.
Yeah, why create content when you can just give the tools for a world where anything can happen to the players? And it's like, yeah, you do it.
Cheap outfits and stuff. Exactly. Well, I mean, look, they're making all the money. They've made a ridiculous amount of money from GTA Online, which, God, it would have been great to have had some DLC for it. And I would love to have had that Undead Nightmare for the original Red Dead Redemption. And that was a lot of fun. I'd love to have something like that for Red Dead 2, but I guess we're a year on and nothing's come out. So
I wonder, you know, because next year we're going to be getting new consoles from Xbox and PlayStation. I wonder if, like, for the transfer from PS3 and 360 to the current console, they did do a remastering of GTA 5. I wonder if they'll do another similar thing for Red Dead Redemption 2 and maybe have more sort of single player stuff or revise the online suite or something like that.
I wouldn't be surprised at all for them to remaster for new consoles when and if they come out. I'm not holding my breath for new content. Mm. We got no new content when GTA 5 was upgraded for the X-Bone.
But we did get active speedometers in the car.
Sorry?
We did get active speedometers in the car.
And you got first person mode. That was it.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. And you had to buy the fucking thing again. No discount if you bought the original. So, Red Dead Redemption 2 is an absolute freaking masterpiece of single player storytelling and gameplay. I don't think you played it, did you?
No. Big games like that, there's not really much chance for me to be able to truly invest enough time into them on a console that I can't take away with me.
You certainly do need to sink some serious hours into it. But if you were, it's the actual story itself. And there's a point in game where everything about it's perfect. In this part of the game, the story's got an amazing zenith. There's actually a song which I think was written for the game, and it's just perfect. Like,
okay. Perfect. Would you say that it is better than the original?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I'm talking everything. Like, the world's bigger. There's more stuff in it. It looks better. Is the story better? Jesus, it's certainly on a par.
Okay. Because I know that everyone was very, very big on the story for the original Red Dead.
The original Red Dead story is wonderful too. So no disrespect to it, but it's on a par. Again, it creates memorable characters. You're well-written, memorable characters who you can become attached to and follow on a wonderful journey and just become really emotionally involved in the characters in their story and what happens to him. And you combine that with largely pretty decent gameplay.
Okay.
it wasn't perfect by any means. Some of the things that they didn't fix from the last game, they didn't fix from GTA 5, kind of like, like, you must have had all the money in the world to make this fucking game. How do you not fix characters can't walk through a door properly, right? You know, but the rest of it's so good. You kind of, I'll overlook that.
I like to think it's the Edward D. Wood Jr. way.
That person has to struggle with getting through a doorway every time. So
animating accurately to that percentage chance they might knock into the doorframe.
Yeah, it's one way of looking at it. I just think it was they probably didn't have time. It was in the backlog, and they just focused on all the other things they had to get right. And damn it, the walking didn't get up as something it was going to get fixed. But we are about a year behind, because that game did come out, I think, last October, November.
So. Yeah.
But that said, if you're like me and you don't like paying full price for games, now would be a wonderful time to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got a lot of content there.
And it's a good 40, 50 hours there of gameplay. If you've, unlike George, don't have to drive and take your game mobile.
Mm-hmm.
It's well worth it. But I think I've said on many occasions, I'd love it if they would maybe put the remastered version or even the original game on the Switch, if it could handle it.
That would be lovely. I reckon that it probably can, considering how... Well, we're within 2 weeks of Witcher 3 coming on to Switch, and by all preview accounts, it is running amazingly. So I think that if people can do Witcher 3, you'd probably be able to do the older gen version of GTA 5, and you'd certainly be able to do Red Dead Redemption.
But maybe it's just a Rockstar. Maybe Rockstar don't want to.
They brought some L.A. Noire to it, and it was pretty good. They solved a few issues, but at the same time, it did feel a bit cheap. And the fact that they were charging full price for a game that was very old and is not one of the kind of true highest bars of Rockstar games, it was like, okay, it's... I don't know if it's actually worth it, and I certainly don't think it was worth it for there was no one buying that who had previously played it.
I mean, I've had a look at it and gone, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was an interesting attempt at doing something new in gaming LA Noire. Didn't quite pull it off. And it was frustrating at times when, for those who aren't familiar, you play an LAPD police detective in the 1940s.
Yeah.
And you go around, funny enough, solving crimes. And you got to like look for clues and interrogate people and stuff. And they did this and they used a lot of motion capture in the interrogation scenes. And that was an interesting effort. But what was really frustrating for me was you investigate a series of murders. Mm. And I think by the third murder, I'd seen the same guy in two of the actual like crime scene type things.
Mm.
Like, oh, that's the guy from before. He was the one, the first murder. He's the murderer.
But you can't do anything. You
can't accuse him. You can't go, he's the murderer. Let's interview that guy. They're like, no, the gang goes, no. You have to accuse this guy. And then like you go, but I know this guy didn't do it because that guy was there. So like, and if you fail to basically get the game's preferred suspect to confess the crime, you like fail the mission.
Yeah.
And you have to do it again. So basically the game forces you down a particular path to end up accusing and convicting the wrong guy for a crime.
Yeah.
Only to come back around later and go, oh, you suck. You convicted the wrong person. You're like, I know. I didn't want to. You made me.
Now so this is just burned on an idea in my head. Something with like the LA Noire style of storytelling of a detective following this legacy, but with something along the lines of the Nemesis system, where if you don't get the right person, they can go away and they can come back. Or if you pick the wrong person and they get convicted or something, as the story progresses or as it goes through the year or whatever, that person comes back with a vendetta or things like that. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, that was a cool thing about LA Noire, I think, was that it was an interesting new type of game, but no one had really pulled it off before. I mean, detective games, I mean, like, you know, Batman kind of shoehorns a detective stuff in. It's not really the main meat and potatoes of a game. That would be cool. World's Greatest Detective in an actual detective game.
That would be cool.
But, I mean, would we want a Batman game? We could beat people, maybe not. But if that was what was cool at the time. It's like, oh, this is different. It's unusual. It's like, I really want this to work. And you're like, it was probably a little bit ahead of its time. Probably the tech wasn't there yet with motion capture and, the gameplay mechanics maybe having the thing well thought out where maybe something like the Nemesis engine could actually potentially allow you now to, not just have vendettas, but also investigate multiple paths for a crime rather than, as you know, this game forced you down a particular path.
Imagine this.
Pulled you out of the game.
Imagine this. A game where you're basically trying to track down the Zodiac Killer.
That would be the shit.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be the Zodiac. I mean, like any, you could do something like that and that would be interesting. But I think it would be, if someone can master this genre where you actually become really feel like a detective who's solving a crime. And I'm happy for someone to come and tell me there's a game out there that does it really well, but I've never heard of one.
Yeah.
I think, look, can you consider how popular true crime is? If you can sell that kind of video game to true crime fans, you know, like the Zodiac Killer or something like that, that would be a surefire hit. But I think L.A. Noire, I don't think, did very well when it first came out. I mean, Team Bondi got shut down pretty much straight afterwards. Another Australian gaming company who got shafted. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not completely privy to its, you know, its numbers, but I think it was widely acknowledged as being an ambitious failure.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's gone there since.
Yeah. So it was an interesting option to bring to the Switch as Rockstar's first game on a Nintendo console that wasn't, I think they made a table tennis game for the DS or something. It's like, okay, that's an interesting heritage they have, because Rockstar, before they became Rockstar, they were
a company that made this awesome N64 game,
Body Harvest, and it was essentially a prototype for what became GTA, where it was just going around open world on the N64. It looked ugly as sin. It worked okay. You could take over any vehicles and things. It was a bizarre game. So they had that, table tennis, and then L.A. Noire. I was like, that's a weird attempts each time.
Yeah, maybe I just sort of thought, here's an opportunity to try and make back a little bit more money on that thing that you never quite got. But it's we really are going old school now. L.A. Noire, we went back a year now. We've gone back 10 years, I think.
For I know.
LA Noire. Again, if you're keen.
In new news, Ben Affleck has also been cast.
You could probably maybe you can get that cheap on the Nintendo store now. I don't know, but
nothing on Nintendo's cheap.
But fun-ish sort of game. It's if you want to feel like a detective and look at people who are lost. It's the only part of it's not fun is that you can't run people over when you're driving around town, because always you have to pay for repairs to your car and stuff.
Yeah. And the moving around the city just wasn't very fun. It was like, okay, I'm having to do this because I need to progress the story, rather than, you know, like Skyrim, where it's like, oh, I'm heading off that door. Ooh, what's that shiny thing? And you just get distracted by so many other things.
No sense of discovery. You didn't like those random missions that you occasionally come across in GTA, which are really wacky and fun. I don't recall them having anything like that.
Yeah.
But I did have collectibles and stuff like that. That was kind of interesting. But
that's right.
And they had actual radio broadcast from the 40s in the game, I think.
Yes, and all the adverts.
And that was cool. But it was some interesting ideas at play there. And I hope one day somebody follows it up and maybe tries again with when the tech is up to snuff and can actually deliver on the promise of a game.
Yeah. Well, looking at it. Sorry?
Good soundtrack too.
And looking at they recently had all the previews go up for The Last of Us Part 2. While I'm not a fan of the first one, the graphical fidelity of all of the footage that's come through, it's incredible. And just looking at sort of like the advancements in sort of minute facial detail and animation from what's coming out in The Last of Us Part 2. If they had that level of quality in something like L.A. Noire, that would be good. You have any interest?
You get back now and you see the complete overacting of the actors who had to do the motion capture, like to try and look shady, so you could go, I think he's lying to me.
Yeah, like everyone in L.A. is a pantomime artist.
I guess it's difficult otherwise to actually have. it's difficult to convey nuance and and that kind of thing through a video game. But as I said, I liked the idea. It was just being completely drawn out of it, having to, you know, do what the game told me to do rather than really feel like a detective. And I should talk about more modern video games, because we did talk a little about it in the last time in the famous Lost episode 51.
Yep.
A few weeks ago, Borderlands 3 came out.
Yep, and it's doing well online because I haven't bought it.
You haven't? Yes, of course. I believe it had more concurrent players than Borderlands 2 ever did.
Wow.
Was what I read, despite the fact everyone was bitching about it being on the Epic Games Store, which I know annoys the shit out of people. I, of course, bought it on console, so it's not my problem. It's interesting that I was a little bit negative about it in the original episode 51. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my opinion's actually gone up a little bit as I've got further into the game.
Okay.
I feel like the game starts really slowly.
Okay.
The game starts on Pandora, which is the original setting for the first two games.
Right.
And it feels a bit tired at the start of the game. A criticism of the game has been, it's just more Borderlands 2.
Mm.
And it is. Except the maps are bigger, the graphics are improved, and there are a lot more guns.
Mm.
But the first hour or so on Pandora was really slow. It actually was a bit of a grind for me. I was like, really? I think I'm not going to like this game. It's like, everyone says it's amazing, but I'm really bored.
Did you find that because it was kind of teaching you how to play the game, and being that you've been a big Borderlands fan, it's kind of like, I already know this, just let me play the fucking game?
I guess so. Well, they weren't really tutorial missions per se, but they were a little bit that way, I guess. Like, maybe trying to intro new players into... It just started the same way as the other games all started, you know? Like, go and unlock the carport thing. Go and meet this character. Go meet that character. I'm like, yeah, I've met them twice.
Yeah.
But maybe that's certainly true. But I think you did bump into a couple of the game's problems early.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'll start with the game problems being the writing isn't good.
Okay.
And the mission design isn't good. And these things are in a bit of a feedback loop on each other, mm-hmm. which weaken the game a little bit, especially early on for me. Because there are a lot of fetch quests early. Go here, kill 5 of these guys, get 10 of those things, pick this thing up, take it to the other place, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I stopped and thought about it. There are a lot of those in the last Borderlands game as well, in Borderlands 2.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference was the writing was so good. The characters were so interesting and fun and lovable. The jokes worked. You know, you wanted to find out what happened. And you were kind of not really noticing the fact that the mission structure sucked, and that you were doing the same mission 15 times, because you're enjoying the journey with so much with those characters you love being around and having a laugh at the jokes, and none of that because that writing isn't anywhere near as strong this time.
Mm.
You find yourself kind of going, oh. Well, the writing is not much fun, so I'll just focus on the gameplay. Mm. And then all of a sudden, the weak gameplay is exposed, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So the writing really is lame. The villains in this one are lame as hell. Don't care who they are. Don't care what's going on. Compared to, say, Handsome Jack from Borderlands 2, I think I said last time, one of the greatest video game villains of all time. I would think you could make an argument for possibly the best written video game of all time for me. It's in a different league to something like Red Dead Redemption, which is more of a sort of really emotional story, but it was a really fun story in Borderlands 2.
Okay.
But so these characters are the Calypso twins. They're parodies of streamers. And they're big... slogan is like, subscribe, and obey. Which isn't a bad plan. I would recommend all of our Russian bots like, subscribe, and obey. And yeah, they're really dull. Yeah, it's that they just don't have any kind of charisma. I don't really know why they're doing what they're doing. It's really generic. I feel like they maybe got some new writers this time. I don't know.
Okay.
But just... in the DP point of the game, there are, you quickly get off Pandora, and there are a number of other planets you get to visit. The more you go to, I don't know, you're just going to get back into the groove a little bit, and it's fun. They aren't terribly different to each other. It's just, you know, a different sort of skin over the same sort of locations.
Okay. Right.
The same sort of things, but... It keeps bopping along at a quick enough pace that you're like, yeah, okay, I'm getting into this now. I'm kind of forgetting that that the story sucks and the game, the missions kind of suck. It's a little bit like in our last broadcast episode, I was talking about Shadows of War, and the fact that I couldn't give two shits about the story. It's just the actual gameplay loop was so much fun. I was really enjoying getting into it, and it's a little bit the same here with Borderlands 3. The gameplay loop is fun enough that you're constantly unlocking new abilities and new guns is enough to keep you entertained and keep the story clicking along. The other problem for me is the maps now are much, much bigger, and they're kind of split over different levels.
Okay.
So the map is, the UI sucks. The map sucks. Getting through your inventory sucks.
Okay.
Pointing. It's still, even now, 3 weeks after launch, the game lags when I open my inventory.
Okay.
And they've patched it twice. We've patched at least two patches that I know about where they've patched stuff in the game. And I'm like, why? And they're like, oh, performance issues should be fixed. I'm like, yeah, they're not. That's disappointing for, again, this is, you know, Take-Two, they've got all the money. This shouldn't have been released like that, but it's a minor quibble. The game is still fun, going around shooting psychos and constantly, you know, like having numbers fly off them and stuff is cool. And, you know, there constantly is a constant supply of new guns to try out, and they say there are like billions of guns in this game, which is, they're procedurally generated, and it's good value, but the gunplay is still fun.
Okay.
So I think if you can get through the first hour, it gets back into its groove again, and it's still a fun game to play. I'm still looking forward to finishing. I'm probably guessing 2/3 of the way through the single player campaign. And I think the multiplayer would probably be fun. And there's actual split-screen multiplayer, so you could have two on a couch multiplayer, which is unusual these days.
It's rare, yeah. Okay.
So good on you for that. I haven't bought a season pass because I don't buy season passes anymore. it's a quality product. It is a quality product with problems.
Yeah.
And I kind of surprised that these problems persisted. I feel like there's some of them could have been, I mean, obviously writing is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not easy to come up with a classic every time, but some of the other stuff, it's a little, again, like a little bit like The Walking in Red Dead Redemption 2. It's a little surprising it survived. if you like the last two, you'll dig this one. Check it out. Especially if you know someone who else is playing it, I think you'll have a lot more fun together.
Fair enough.
Unfortunately, I don't know anybody else is playing, so I got to play solo as usual.
Yeah, well, if you're going to do it alone, I guess.
Well, everybody else I know is playing,
Apex Legends? Oh, Breakout.
Breakout, which I heard isn't very good.
I haven't heard anything about it. That's the one that they got John Bernthal involved with or something, I think.
I've seen a few reviews on YouTube from the beta last weekend.
Oh yeah,
good.
Mm.
They have monetized the living shit out of it.
I'm not surprised. I mean, fucking everything is now.
Well, I think though this is next level, right? They have monetized this to within the next of its life. Like there is nothing in the game you can't buy with money.
Wow.
Level, okay. Skill points, guns, everything.
Let me guess, they're still going to charge full price for the game anyway as well.
Price.
Did you see all the backlash about the new Call of Duty game?
Yeah, I've heard again. It's they've got a PlayStation exclusive. One of the modes is PlayStation exclusive for a year.
Yeah, just in time for when the next Call of Duty will come out.
Yeah. Disappointing from PlayStation. Disappointing from is it Activision? Well, nothing.
Yeah, Activision.
Not a bishy for me. I'm almost certainly not going to play it. But it's, I imagine it would be frustrating for COD fans that a chunk of the game is locked off if you play on Xbox or I guess it's on PC.
Yes, sir.
That said, I'm not sure you're in a position to criticize, considering someone's got an exclusive with Amazon for 90 days.
Oh, well, you know, that's, yeah. So after the failure of the Kickstarter for Vaughn, today I officially submitted my book to Vaughn, to this guy called Vaughn, no, to Amazon for their Kindle service. And it's part of their Kindle Select program. And you need to be exclusive for 90 days to be a part of that. It just gets a lot more kind of a push, a drive. But that does mean that in 90 days, it will be available everywhere else. That's totally fine. The if you go onto Amazon, it's not up yet. It's probably going to be about 3 days or 4 days that you'll be able to get the ebook. And you'll also, if you want, you can get a copy of a physical book because Amazon do on-demand printing. It's going to be way cheaper to get via them for a physical copy than it ever would have been to come directly through me. They have a much better worldwide distribution network than I do. So it's way cheaper.
That's for a shock.
Yeah.
That is a shock. I would have thought your worldwide distribution network might be on a par with potentially the largest retailer on earth. But I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, I have a drone. I could have flown it 200 meters. It might have been able to carry a book.
You have a dog.
Yeah. Which would have got lost by the end of the driveway. but yes.
I'll be behind it. I'll be buying a copy. So I'll be giving them out to people as Christmas presents. Be like the human funder in Seinfeld. so get behind it, people. The Kickstarter people were no fun. You don't get to have we might even let someone take over the podcast randomly if they want to.
Yeah, we'll just phone someone up just randomly. So like, hi, you're on. Now talk.
hi. Yeah, who's this?
Like,
I thought I was buying the Dan Brown novel.
Don't insult me.
Yeah, you're a much better writer than Dan Brown. Yeah, so it's exciting, though. Like, I like my excuse that Amazon are locking you in for 90 days. At least it's not the Epic Games Store, so, you know.
No. And, you know, it gets me a bit more publicity through Amazon, and they are the biggest
retailer in the world. So it kind of makes sense
to go there. And obviously, there are a lot of people who like to have the physical copy of a book, so they have that option. And if you buy the physical copy of the book for, I can't remember if it's 99 cents or $1.99, you get the ebook as you can get the ebook extra. So it's a really good option.
We'll come around to your house and beat the shit out of you like Jay and Silent Bob at the end of
a note on the audiobook version, that's hopefully about a month away, but that's yet to work out quite how I'm going to get on there, because I was hoping to get it on Audible, but the company that they use to get things on there is not available in the Australian market, so that's a pain. I'm looking at workarounds now.
An author I'm a big fan of, John Birmingham, so if you like Tom Clancy, you'll probably like John Birmingham's more recent novel, some people, so sort of, you know, Frillis, really big fan of his writing, and he's an Australian author from Brisbane. He's been quite prolific recently. So he released two books in the last couple of months. One of them is on Audible, the Audible audiobook version.
Yeah. I think Australia. If you've got a publisher, one, you know, yeah. But I, you know, still one's not. Oh.
Yeah. So he's got two books, audiobooks have been released. So you can get both of them on Audible in the US.
Yeah.
The second one, even him who has, you know, I mean, he's not exactly Stephen King, but he's an author of some note.
Yeah.
At least in the Australian market, can't get his other one released in Australia on Audible for some reason. I'm like, what the fuck? It's, you know, it's a fucking digital copy. Who gives a shit what you're in? I mean, it's probably some sort of rights bizzo, but
yeah. But so news on that will be coming. I'm actually because I'm not actually beholden to timelines that I set out on Kickstarter for anything. I'm actually going to spend a little bit of time and turn this little nook into a proper sound studio so that it's going to be even better quality audio. So it's more work, but probably by Wednesday next week, if you want to, which I hope you will, you can get a copy of my book.
That's it. And you will be published.
Yeah.
You'll be a published author. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. But back to things that I didn't create, because it's always nerve-wracking talking about things that I do. Following on from the games, we had a remaster of a classic Nintendo game come to Switch very recently, and that was Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. And this is, again, another one of the Zelda games that I have not played before. And it's really weird going back to it because the first game that I kind of was able to look back on and see that I had logged over 100 hours was Breath of the Wild. Going back to a top-down, kind of much more linear story option, you have to do dungeons in certain order and things like that. It's really weird and it feels so easy. So easy to do when you compare it to the diversity of Breath of the Wild. And it's really hard to keep going. I've put probably 10 or 12 hours into this remaster or this remake. And it's like, I'm not really feeling it to continue. It's great. It plays nicely. It looks adorable. And it's fun. But at the same time, there's no kind of entertaining challenge to it. Like, okay, I know exactly how to defeat this. Look, there's a big red dot on that creature where I have to hit. And, oh, yep, that's the pattern. That'll just keep going. And that's far less obvious in the newer Zelda game. So it's nice to kind of have that juxtaposition of two very successful games from two very distinct time periods so close together and kind of go, oh yeah, they've evolved the formula in a much better way. It's just much more my tastes, what the new Zeldas are like.
It's interesting that they have a game mechanic, not just the game. It's not just about the graphics and the sound. You can update the graphics and the sound, but the actual gameplay itself can still feel.
Yeah. Because I remember my first Zelda game was Ocarina of Time on the N64, and that was mind-blowing at the time. It's still a great game. And I remember kind of how open it seemed when you get out of Kakariko Village and there's just the Hyrule Plains and it goes from day to night and the skeletons come out of the ground. It's like, oh my God, this world is so huge. But it was still kind of, yeah, you have to do everything in order. And they kind of tricked you into this false sense of open world. They did a very good job of directing you without doing the LA Noir thing of, no, you literally can't go there yet, even though it's painfully obvious. We're making it, they made it much more entertaining to just follow where the story was leading you. But now with Breath of the Wild, where it's like, okay, you come out of the cave, you can go straight to fucking Ganondorf if you like. You'll be naked and with a stick, but you can do it if you want. that freedom, it's so much more entertaining and enjoyable. I really, really love it.
I just like to say, noob, my first Nintendo game was The Legend of Zelda. The gold cartridge on the NES.
Yeah, well, shut up.
I believe the one ran out of a gold cartridge. They're quite valuable.
Yeah, the Ocarina of Time had a gold cartridge, and I had that when that came out, and that's, fuck, that was like 1996, I think, or 94 or something like that. That's pretty damn old too now.
Well, it's 20 years ago. I think it was probably 25 years ago. I used to go around to my friend's place and we played Zelda.
Yeah.
For like a week, you know, like in school holidays, it'd just be like trying to... Back in those days, of course, you didn't have the internet with all the like telling you all the secrets and stuff where you just had to go around into every single fucking room of the game, put a bomb against the wall and see if there was anything in there.
Yeah, so like, oh, I've got to cut down every blade of grass that I see because there might be a hidden entrance.
With a herring. Oh, no, yeah, it was, what a great game that was. It was, if that felt kind of huge at the time, right? Like compared to something like, you know, Super Mario Brothers, where you're basically on a rail, you go in one direction and
yeah,
that's it. But like Zelda, you kind of had, you chose where you wanted to go, right? Like, you could go up, down,
left, right, wherever you wanted.
In, you know, in 1989, 1990, which is probably still a few years after it originally came out, which is when I played it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a massive amount of freedom. That was open world at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I hope I'm wrong, and I do hope I actually enjoy it. So if I do, that'll just mean that I don't sleep on a plane.
Well, you're not gonna get any sleep while you're there by the sounds of it. So yeah.
No,
why not just go complete insomniac for a while and you'll be even more trippy.
As in speed.
Now, two things there's three things that I'd like to comment on. First of all, I watched Disenchantment Season 2 on Netflix.
This series of makers of Futurama, right?
Correct, yes. And it's set in the fantasy world. And the first season, when I watched it, it was weird because it was much more cynical. There wasn't as much to love about it instantly as Futurama or The Simpsons. And it took a lot of time to actually kind of bond with the characters that you had. And even now, I can't actually remember the names of the characters except Elfo and Bean. There's a devil character that I can't remember. For some reason, I want to say Terry, but I know that's completely wrong. Terry the devil. But season two picks up where season one left off, and Princess Tia Beanie is being taken back to her mother's homeland, and the dreamland where the first season took place, it has been left in stone. And there's just Tia Beanie's dad, the king, is one of the few that's not been turned to stone.
Spoilers for season one.
Yeah. Come on, anyone who wanted to watch it has watched it. It's binge world. Lucy is the name of the devil. Jesus, I should have got that. But it's this second season does a much better job of opening the world up. There's other worlds, not just Dream World and where the elves come from and things like that. They open it up, and there's much more kind of almost kind of that easy watching sitcom kind of thing. It's not as easy to watch as your stereotypical sitcom of The Big Bang Theory, The Friends, Cheers, all that sort of stuff, where it's designed to instantly ingratiate itself into your life and kind of go, oh, that was fun. But they have done a much better job of making the characters more approachable without kind of saying, nah, fuck everything that you saw in season one. So they learnt a very good lesson from season one, and they've managed to build the world and build the characters in a very successful way. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next next season going on. There's no spoilers, but the how the story develops over season two is actually really interesting, and it's sort of like cool. And there's even a couple of little nods to Futurama, and that may seem really weird. So like, wait, a fantasy thing with elves and castles, and Futurama is referenced, directly referenced. And it is that kind of in-joke stuff that I really loved about Futurama, the forward planning for Futurama, where Nibbler's shadow was under the desk in episode one of Futurama, and he was the reason that Fry went back into it, and that doesn't come around until like season two or season three, much later, and they're like, holy shit, oh, they thought that so far ahead, it's awesome. They do something really
cool. I watched the first couple episodes and just couldn't get into it.
That's fair. I can understand that.
I guess maybe I should give it a few more episodes to see if it gets better, but I don't know. I think if you go in expecting Futurama, you're not going to get that.
No, you're not. You're not. You're not. But I think if you want to actually sit down and invest some time into quite an intelligently written, well-written adult comedy cartoon show, this is a really nice option, and it's a very different kind of option to everything else that's adult comedy, like Rick and Morty and Family Guy and the South Parks and that kind of stuff. This is telling one grand story. This is almost more like reference Disenchantment in the same vein as like what they did with Avatar, The Legend of Aang, where it was three seasons. You can kind of take the episodes individually, but as it grows, it becomes just this one epic. And that's definitely what they're doing here. But the themes and the attitudes and the language is just much more adult orientated, where Legend of Aang was very much a Nickelodeon show. This is not. And it's nice to have that alternative type of animation out there. So I really recommend it if you like that long form storytelling.
It's nice that there's a variety of things out there for people, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I mean, we were, 20 years ago, cartoons were for children.
Yep.
There was virtually no adult animation. I mean, whereas you compare to, say, Japan, which has that very long history of animation being a variety of different, you know, audiences, mm. you know? I'm really excited that we've come around now in the West to go, but you know, animation isn't just for children.
Yeah.
You've got, you sort of said your Rick and Morty's, your South Parks, your Family Guys.
And then you have the stuff like, the David Lynch, Tim Miller short series, Sex, Death and Robots.
Yeah. That was so good.
That was so good. Can't wait for another season of that. Cause that was awesome.
Yeah. They did renew it for another season if I remember correctly.
Mm. Now, the other one of the other things I want to talk about is another Netflix one, In the Shadow of the Moon. Now, this is a Netflix original movie. And I'm only halfway through watching it, but so far, I'm actually quite impressed with it. It's not a top tier, oh my God, it's nothing like what Scorsese's magnum opus is going to be like when that comes out in November. This is just a pure and simple, it wants to be an entertaining detective sci-fi-ish story, and it sets its bar pretty on the comfortable, that's entertaining level, and it does a good job. It's got Boyd Holbrook in it, who I only really know from, he was the guy with the bionic arm in Logan. Michael C. Hall, who was Dexter. And then the other main character in it is someone I don't know, I've never seen before, Cleopatra Coleman. A Philadelphia detective slowly unravels as he nurses a lifelong obsession with an enigmatic female serial killer whose crimes defy explanation. And from that, it sounds very stock standard. And in so many ways, it is. But it does every element of it well so far. Like I say, I'm only halfway through, but every actor is doing a good job. And the script is a bit cliched in some ways. Like, it's like, really? you're doing the obsessive thing and no one of your friends around you is kind of calling you on the fact that you are being a fucking awful father. Is like, okay, but it's serving the story. That's fine. We're just, the pace of the story continues quite nicely. So it's kind of good to see the benchmark and the quality of Netflix movies being much more in line. Like, I remember when the pre-release of the Max Landis written Bright with Will Smith and Joel Edgerton, when that was on its coming out, it's like, oh, it's going to have its proper summer blockbuster style budget. It's going to be amazing. And it was just a hot mess. And then you had stuff like Mute.
Some people really like that.
Huh?
Some people said it was really good.
Yeah, some people are wrong. It had some good ideas, but it didn't do any of them. It didn't execute any of them particularly well. But then you had stuff like Mute, which was a much smaller budget thing from Duncan Jones. But they got the budget right for what they ended up making. But it just, again, was half-baked. This one, it's been in the oven for the perfect amount of time. They measured off all the ingredients perfectly. And, you know, it's totally fine. Probably not going to think about it once I finish watching it. But it was entertaining. Did a good job. It didn't taint the Netflix brand in any way. It just like, okay, that's a solid movie that's good for an hour and a half. All right. Yeah.
I was gonna point two things at this point. One, Cleopatra Coleman is an Australian actress who was in Neighbours. So yay for the Aussies getting a run in Hollywood.
Bloody
And two, IMDb and Metacritic would potentially take issue with you saying it's not sullying the name of Netflix. It's got a 6.2 and a 48 Metascore. I would say it's reinforcing on those numbers Netflix reputation for making what we would have called in the 90s direct-to-video stuff.
No, I think that those are pretty accurate because I'm saying it's very average and those are kind of quintessential average figures.
So I'd say it's not doing it any further harm because it's or its reputation. Yeah.
It's not doing any more harm. It's not like another fucking Adam Sandler comedy. It's a solid movie that you're going to forget.
It's how much further ahead of it is it Tubi, right? Like, I mean, really, I actually went into the Netflix movie world this week myself, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, is becoming a, I'm increasingly reluctant to do because they're almost always awful. Awful is a strong word. They're almost always average at best, which I think is what you said there about In the Shadow of the Moon. It's average. Watchably average. When I see a film like Triple Border or whatever it was, the Triple Frontier, with Charlie Hunnam and that cast was it Oscar Isaacs in there as well?
Yeah,
Ben Affleck.
That was quite a cast.
And it's been directed by J.C. Chandler, who is I think one of the more underrated directors going around today. He directed a film in 2011 called Margin Call, which is one of my favorite films of the last 10 years, and a film called All Is Lost, which is also a truly excellent movie. And you're like, you add that cast, you add that director, and you're like, yeah, Mark Boll wrote the screenplay. Mark Boll wrote the screenplay for Zero Dark 30 and The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
He had quality written all over it, and it really was powerfully average.
Yeah.
And it was quite dull, to be honest. So I went this week and I thought, fuck it, I'll try it. A few people said it's good. I'll check out Red Sea Diving Resort.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I always thought it sounded like a really dumb name for a movie. But I guess once you watch it for a little while, it kind of starts to make sense. So Red Sea Diving Resort, notable cast member includes Chris Evans, Captain America himself, Greg Kinnear makes an appearance as a familiar face, and Ben Kingsley's in there as well.
Okay.
You know Ben will do any money, as we just sort of mentioned earlier. Written and directed by Gideon Raff, or Gideon Raff, notable because he is the man behind Homeland, the original Homeland and the American remake.
Yes.
Sacha Baron Cohen, Netflix series The Spy, which I watched episode one of a few weeks ago and thought it was pretty good. Quality. There we go. You know, it's an Academy Award winner in there, and Kingsley, Gideon Raff, who's done some interesting stuff on telly. Meh. That's all I have to say about it. It's by the fucking numbers at every possible step of the way.
Yeah.
Essentially, what's happening is there are Jewish people who are being persecuted in Ethiopia. They are escaping with the help of Chris Evans, who's some kind of spy slash commando slash mercenary who's helping these Jews escape into Sudan. He is Israeli himself. He helps his Jews escape from Ethiopia into a refugee camp in Sudan, where he'll try and work out a way to get them out of a country. They are struggling to find a way to get them out of a country now, but they can't fly them out anymore because reasons. They have to try and get them out by sea, and so they devise a plan by where they, for a front company, end up renting an abandoned diving resort in Sudan, which is basically used as a front to, you know, evacuate these escaping Jewish Ethiopian refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Your face is it all. Your face is meh.
Yeah, because it kind of sounds like
a bit Argo-ish.
It definitely has an Argo edge because I think it's based on a real story. I think it might have been something that actually happened. It definitely is evoking that sense we got from Argo of, you know, like, you know, noble people doing things to evacuate, you know, pretending to be something they're not. So there's a spy angle and they're under constant threat, you know, that they're, you know, of that violence to themselves, as well as, you know, obviously the death of the refugees himself.
Yeah,
and you got your standard sort of group, a motley crew of guys that, you know, Chris Evans has to go around to recruit at the start of a film, and it pulls every fucking trope in the book. You know, like, think the scene in The Blues Brothers where they go to recruit Mr. Fantastic from a restaurant. He sees him and goes, I thought you got 10 years. To me, it was 10 years, 20 years. And, you know, yeah, and like, we're putting the band back together. No way. You know, and like, we have that scene. No way. You never, I'm not going, I'm done, I'm out. You know, and you're like, we have seen this so many times, people.
Yeah. That scene also happened in Triple Frontier 2 as well.
Yeah, I'm out, I'm done, you know, not doing it anymore. And I mean, no spoilers, but that guy always dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, one more day till retirement, you know. it's just like, and so it's like, it's not in any way. So I think I'm actually kind of supporting your point here about In the Shadow of the Moon here, because it is in no way bad. It's solid. It's shot well. It's got some money behind it. Obviously, Chris Evans doesn't work for free. Chris Evans is amiable, likable, you know, believable as a kind of, not really, you know, is this going to sound racist? He doesn't strike me as Israeli. I don't know. I don't know what I expect an Israeli to look like. But he sounds really American, right? Like, and most Israeli people you talk to, a lot of them do have American accents, but I don't know.
When you say Chris Evans to me, I don't instantly kind of go, oh yeah, character actor will be able to pull off any kind of accent or kind of ethnical background or anything like that. I think, yeah, a likable guy that I can just enjoy watching for a while, and he does solid work. And
he was perfect as Captain America. I mean,
yeah,
it's quite casting. Because he's kind of your white bread, blue head, blonde hair, blue eyed, blonde haired, all American.
Blonde eyed. That's a weird character, man.
Like, I think back to the film Munich, the Steven Spielberg film, 2004. And the massively underrated Eric Banner for me. I'm a big fan of what Eric Banner can do when he gets good material. Eric Bana made an I think he could pull off a number of different. There's a guy that I think you could do that, right? He's a character actor. I mean, he can do an American character. He can do, obviously, he's Australian. That makes life easier.
But he can do a lot of, like, his work in Hannah was fantastic with that accent. It was just.
And he was good. I think he kind of really. He looks like somebody I would expect to be an Israeli spy. I don't know. I mean, an Israeli could be from anywhere, obviously, where people. You know, people from the Jewish faith in any number of different countries. I just don't even buy Chris Evans as anything but American.
Yeah.
So I don't really think he really tried to do anything outside of being Chris Evans.
Yeah.
So I'm putting a stick in the boots here a bit. It's fine.
Yeah. I think these movies are all ones that are good at filling out the Netflix portfolio. And like we've said before, if they had been coming out with this quality of movie when they first started doing their original content instead of the real dreg that they were doing then, they would be in a much better position now. I think that a lot of this is kind of reactive to, well, shit, we lost all of the Disney stuff and people are still going into that search bar and searching Chris Evans. They're going in and searching all these other people. So I'm like, okay, let's get them involved in any fucking project so that they are watching something when they say, oh yeah, I want to watch something with Chris Evans. They're kind of filling those gaps in their catalog right now. And I think they
always said that the Adam Sandler film, The Hateful, whatever is that?
Oh, The Ridiculous Six.
That one was like the most watched thing they've ever had at that point.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it, but I have heard it's just awful. I mean, even for a Sandler film.
Yep.
So
yeah,
you are right in sense of name recognition. He said, "Oh, Chris Evans, Captain America's in it. We'll watch that."
Yeah. You know, exactly.
I know because a lot of people said to me they watched it and they liked it. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's plenty to like about it, but it's not a movie to love. It's not going to win any awards. Honestly, just like okay.
I was a bit bored. I was pretty bored. It was a struggle for me. Like, you know, like, you're right. The actors are likable. They're doing the best they can. There's a pretty girl in there who I assume will, you know, be a star one day, or maybe she won't be, but like, it's just, I was just like, if it was anything better for me to do right now, I'd probably be doing it. Mm. Like it was on me. Look, you're right. It's not Uwe Boll bad. It's not Ghostbusters 2016, cringeworthy, awful.
Mm-hmm.
But it was on the less enjoyable, on the more boring side of passable, I guess. It's good. Yeah, I was a bit disappointed.
Everybody here feels everyone needs to show themselves. Yeah. stir.